Hello everyone and welcome. My name is Lear. I'm a librarian at Teenscape. Welcome to our next installment of Career Conversations. This is going to be recorded for our podcast, so thank you for Robus for recording. Your voice will be recorded, so we will be repeating a question from audience members when we take the questions. And now for introductions. I'd like to welcome Kevin, an architect staff engineer at Weedmaps, Lauren, a systems engineer at Automatic, and Charlie Wilkins, an engineer at Cellbrite. Thank you for joining us today. So, the first question is, describe what you do as well as what your company does overall.
I hope I hold this close enough. So, I work for Weedmaps. Our company is focused on connecting consumers to weed and facilitating the legalization and normalization around recreational and medicinal cannabis. I specifically work on the architecture of our software platforms. So we have weedmaps.com as our main domain. We also own several others like cannabis.com and marijuana.com, and we're expanding into other markets as well. What I help the company with is figuring out what databases and what our APIs should look like, and helping design out and plan the implementations of those. What is an API?
Yeah.
An API is an application program. An application program interface.
That's right.
It's the way in which a programmer can interface with another piece of software. Typically, in modern web, that is describing an HTTP interface, but API can describe anything.
Any sort of interface, mm-hmm. Which is a big part of what we do. Go ahead.
Okay. So my name is Lauren. I work for Automatic, which is the parent company behind WordPress.com. I don't know if you guys have heard of WordPress, but it's an online publishing platform. So any user can create a website, get it online, and then in addition to that, we do enterprise customers as well. So that means most of the major news publications use our platform to as part of their online presence. And that includes companies like CNN, NBC, Time, many, many of the major news publications. And what I do there is I'm on the systems team and work specifically within the realm of stability. So I work to help ensure that the code that we run on this platform that affects millions and millions of users is not prone to errors, is secure, so it's not getting hacked or your user information isn't getting shared, and that it's fast. So when you go ahead and access any of these sites on your mobile phone or an internet browser, that the page loads really quickly and you can interact with it really quickly.
Yeah, I'll step in there. Yeah. Have any of you read a blog? Do you know what a blog is? Have you seen a blog? Say yes or no. Okay, most blogs, the software behind it is usually WordPress, right? So
WordPress is 29.2% of the sites on the internet right now.
That's impressive. My name is Charlie Wilkins. I am a senior developer, engineer, technologist at a company called Cellbrite. And the name doesn't tell you much, but what we do is we do multi-channel inventory and sales management for small and medium businesses, online retailers. So say you're a person that has obtained some inventory, like you have all these awesome Pokemon socks, and you're like, what am I going to do with all these awesome Pokemon socks? Well, we can help you. We'll help you put them on eBay and Amazon and Shopify and Etsy. It's a little iffy. So my role there is do a lot of different things. We only have 20 people, so at companies that small, I do like set up servers. I write a lot of application code. I review a lot of code. Reading code is really important. And that's me. Do you have any questions?
So we'll keep warming the audience up. So in terms of schooling, high school and college, what kind of classes do you recommend?
Through my experience, I found that mathematics and anything that kind of like enriches your ability to think logically. So math and science are definitely at the forefront of what I found useful in my day-to-day. Software is a super logical construct that you have to always be thinking about. That's where I would focus. And I'm glad that I was able to in my schooling.
Yeah, I would agree. Math is really important, and that's probably what makes the most sense. It's interesting because we work in an industry that changes so quickly that I wouldn't say there's any particular class that maybe outside of something like math or heavily science-based that will make it easy for you to get a job or work in the right language, because the languages change, the tools change. It's an interesting field in that degree. I have a master's degree in computer science, but I would say what I learned in school was not the most relevant to my day-to-day job. There's a lot of also like online courses you can take, as well as just, I would say, trying to learn, build anything. And I think that's really, really the most valuable probably.
Math science is great. I think the math and science, along with that, a lot of critical thinking, which I don't know, like when I went to school, there was like, you know, how to think critically, which, you know, I think that's important. How to evaluate different sources of information, et cetera. How to, you know, distinguish between opinions and facts and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's a very low level. In addition to the math and science and the critical thinking, communication, English, writing skills is really important. Not only because you will work with a lot of people that have a hard time communicating ideas, like I'm having, but you know, it helps if you're able to get down in the written word these complex ideas and convey them to someone else. Ultimately, that's what programming is. You're not writing, I mean, you are writing code for the computer to understand, but you're also writing it for other people to understand. So just work on communication skills. I think that's important. Yes.
That'll give you an advantage too, because not everybody in our field does have those. So if you do, then that really sets you apart as well.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I want to echo that as well. But in addition to that, when you're actually writing the code, being able to structure it in a way that the code itself can communicate, so you can like not just your ability to communicate to another, but to communicate through writing, is really important as well. To understand how different objects in code relate to language semantics, like nouns and verbs and parts of speech and stuff like that, can really facilitate communication in through your code.
Any questions, volunteers? All right. members of the audience that know the speakers? No. So to segue from what you were saying, Lauren, a lot of times in these career conversations, but what can I do now? And you said, it's not necessarily what you're learning in school, it's your day-to-day. So are there high school internships, college internships in your fields, and in particular where you all work at?
Oh, There's not actually at my company, so well, I mean, it would be great,
why.
But
I mean, I think that's important.
Why there isn't?
What? Just because you're 18 and over distributed.
Oh. Or was there a certain internship that you guys did to segue into the career that you did have?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I can take that one. I actually met these two fine gentlemen at a job that I had an internship at to start. Like I said, I had a master's degree, but like zero experience and didn't know how to do anything. And I started working at this company that is now actually just a few blocks down called Nation Builder. And I interned there for a semester, summer while I was at school. And then they ended up hiring me full time once I graduated. And that's really what launched my career. It's like I said, how I met these two. To answer the other question, my company, Automatic, does not offer internships because, as Charlie was saying, we're distributed. So we don't have, even though we have actually 600 to 700 employees worldwide, we don't have an office. Everybody works from home, and we communicate specifically mostly over text and chat, which is also why communication is really important, because we write everything. We don't even speak it. But that's why we, in particular, don't offer internships, but most companies do.
Weedmaps does not, and we're not completely distributed. We are somewhat distributed. I think we've discussed it. I do think that there are great ways to get people into the industry. I personally, the way that I entered was I actually studied microbiology in college and ended up going into computer science, not in school, but because I really liked video games. And there were some frameworks out there that allowed me to like program and muck around with different video game technologies, and it was like way over my head. So what I did, and it's kind of ironic that we're in a library, I got a book that was like 1,200 pages long, and I just started reading it. And every code example in there, I could pull out my laptop, I could install it, it was all open source, like everything was out there for me to use. So I was able to just start playing with it and really got involved. And that I had to learn really complex things in order to get like an application running, like to get the game that I wanted, which was just an asteroid shooter. Like I had to understand how like spatial things can like detect whether they're next to each other or colliding with each other. And that mathematics was actually like something that I didn't know before, but had to learn. And so it was the process of like wanting to build something that got me the education that I needed to then move on in my
career. We don't have internships. And I never took an internship. I had a mentor when I think I was 18, 17 or 18. And I met his friend of mine that I worked with, but he was very interested in computers. He had, at one time he was a roommate, and we had our living room had like this tower of dead Amiga?
What?
I think it means friend or something. No, it was this old 1970s consumer computer product. So it's a dead product now, but they were really popular for a while. So mentor if you can find them. That's hard to do. I would also say be lucky. And actually, that brings up another point. Something that kind of helps a lot, Lauren has gotten way better at this. Kevin was always good at it. Being able to talk to people, not in addition to the written communication, but just being able to talk to people at conferences or meetups. And that brings up a third point. We're getting there. In addition to the not having internships, try to find a mentor, be lucky, but there's also great resources in the community, especially around open source. Meetup.com, you can, if you're interested in any level of technology or anything, there's some weird areas on there, but stay in the tech area. A lot of these companies will host these meetups, and you can go and meet someone who is, if they're there, they probably either want to share or yeah, they probably want to help, you know? So I haven't had a bad experience with meetup.com yet. So that's a great resource if you're interested.
Yeah, actually I was going to say a point on that. The first meetup I ever attended was with Charlie, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. I like sat on the side and he pushed me in. But later on, I then started attending meetups like at a different job because I was hiring. And that's when I really started talking to people, because it's like-minded folks and they're all getting together to learn about the same topic. And so it's a great recruitment platform. And so meetups are really, really great in that respect. Also, one note on the internships, which I don't know if everybody knows this, but computer science, software engineering internships are paid, unlike a lot of other industries. So you can actually often almost support yourself on an internship, which is not like many, many industries, in fact. I think actually, as an intern, just to kind of like give you numbers, I remember when I was starting out, I was making the same amount as an intern that my friend was, who was like a coordinator at DreamWorks or something like that. So it really can pay off financially too.
Yeah, and with regards to meetups, Weedmaps has started doing meetups on a monthly basis. We're going to have one February 27th down in Orange County. That's where we're based, in Irvine. So if you can find us on Meetup, you can come and join us and learn about Elixir and some other languages that we're working with there and the problems that we're solving. And then meet a lot of people who are, you know, heavily invested in the community, because we're all software engineers, so.
Well, I just have a follow-up question, and that's amazing that the internships are paid. That is very rare. So mentorship, you know, all of that. So for librarians, there is a database and you can like submit yourself and get a mentor. Is there such a thing in your career area, or do you have to know someone to kind of like get you in the right path and they can introduce you to a mentor?
A lot of companies do. Once you're like in a company, the companies themselves help facilitate mentorship. It's one of the cornerstones, like a kind of an apprentice type like role. That's where I learned a lot when I was working at Riot Games, which makes League of Legends. I learned a lot from a couple of the people that I worked with, and being able to work with them on a daily basis really invigorated my career. I don't know of one online.
How to find a mentor?
Well, like a database.
Oh. No.
But you can't. But there are plenty of online resources and places that you can start asking questions. I know I've been Stack Overflow. Reddit has a lot of subreddits that are really good. One of my favorite languages that I've been playing with right now, called Rust, they have a lot of open IRC channels, which allow you can just go in. It's kind of dated technology. It's not
stable.
The language.
Stable technology.
It's stable. Stable is a good word. What does IRC?
It's a chat client.
Internet Relay Chat?
It's a chat client. So it's just like Slack or what AOL used to be, but really solid.
What AOL is in Messenger.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Like G-chat, kind of like G-chat, but different.
It just seems antiquated when you use it, but it's like what a lot of the internet was kind of like built around, like the conversations.
We still use it automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only our team.
Mozilla heavily uses IRC. Almost all of their communications are IRC. And if you go there, you can meet people who are actually writing the languages themselves. And they love to communicate with people. There's a couple of people that I know that I don't personally know, but I see them, they reach out and they engage with anyone asking questions online. And I think there's a new term that they started using for these people called developer advocates. And they'll go out and they'll find anyone who's asking a question and try to answer it or point them in the direction that they need to find the answer.
Excellent. Actually, yeah. So WordPress is open source software, but it's something that we also use in a private manner as well to make money. But the open source platform does have, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Slack. It's a chat way to chat. It's a free software.
Familiar with Slack?
Okay. Yeah, it's like a messenger, but you can look it up, slack.com, and you can create your username and group, and you can talk with people. And WordPress, the open source community, runs a lot of its operations off of Slack. So anybody can go into a Slack channel for WordPress.org and ask a question about how do I get started, how do I develop on this software, and someone will almost instantaneously answer. And that said as well, because WordPress.org is open source, like what Kevin was talking about, free software developed by a community for a community, you can get started almost immediately. There's how-to guides. People will point you in the directions of like easy bugs or things to read, and you can start submitting patches that way. And that is how people definitely will also kind of start and develop a career, as well as by going to these.
Kevin, what have
doing, it's been doing some work ups for free, but it's doing work that affects a lot of people and kind of gets your name out as well.
Why do people work for free?
Passion.
Oh, yeah, I'm leaving you.
Yeah, passion. But I also think, too, a lot of people, because this is an open source platform that many, many businesses use, a lot of people are professional developers that use this on a day-to-day basis, and they're building also this public application because they're still using it and they want these features. But, yeah, passion, I would say, drives probably a lot of us in this field. Passion and money.
Yeah, I think money too. Kevin, what have been some ups and downs?
Well, it was all up until I met. ups and downs. It does. There are some ebbs and flows for sure in programming, and sometimes you can get stuck at a company that's like not progressing you. That's what happened to me the first company I was at. They wanted to put me on a track that would take like 4 years to advance, but I was advancing quicker. Like I felt I was advancing faster than that. And so you have to know, my lesson from that was know what your abilities are and what you can do, and then pursue that. And don't allow people to like slow you down or get in your way. That's easier said than done, but there's risk involved if you start pushing.
Give us an up.
An up? Lots of ups. I mean, for me, the biggest ups are always when I get to learn something new. So when I get to learn a new language, interact with a new database, or when I complete a project, when I ship something and I can show someone on my phone or on a website and be like, I did that. One of the biggest ones this past year, in anticipation of legalization of marijuana, one of the things that we've been pushing for or building was the ability to show the brands of different cannabis vendors that are out there. You can think of them like a Budweiser or like a Coors Light. You guys might not be old enough for this, but it's kind of a big thing, because when something becomes legal, the brands start to matter. Like, what can I trust the product that I'm buying? And so what we did was we built a way for a brand and a vendor, like a dispensary or a delivery service, to make sure that they were good, right? That what you were buying was actually what you thought you were buying, right? I mean, if you're buying a controlled substance, like, you want to know that you're buying it from a reputable source. You don't want to be buying something shady. And so we built that, and So we built something that allowed that to happen, and I was able to show people, and there's a little badge that shows up when the product is endorsed by the brand, and that you know that when you're going to the dispensary that you're getting that actual thing. And we spent over a year building this platform out, and when we actually shipped it, it felt really good.
What about you two?
Ups, there's more ups than downs, I'll tell you that. There are worse things you could do, right? We all work in air-conditioned offices. We are given most all of the resources we could need to do what we need to do. I think the big risk is there's too many snacks. So the downs is like maybe not getting enough exercise. But yeah, you know, when I think of the different careers that you could have, like I could be in the Bering Strait, those guys on the most dangerous catch or, you know, I mean, deadliest catch, which, I mean, I love seeing it on TV, but I'm going to go work in an office where it's air conditioned and a Coke Zero is 20 feet away. That's nice. That's kind of a perk of it. It's been a good, like, it's a, you know, if you have the interest and aptitude in technology, it is, there's so many upsides to a career in technology. And then I know all of us wear this to work every day. So that's another.
Actually, I don't even wear this to work normally. This is like fancy for
yeah.
you guys.
Yeah.
I hear that actually goes to an office every day.
Yeah, that's true. go ahead.
Yeah, so is there like a dress code for work or is
that's. Yeah, there.
Sorry, we're recording, so I have to repeat the question. So the question is there a dress code for your jobs? So if you work at home or in an office?
I have to wear pants. I mean, these are pants, short pants or long pants. Usually a shirt. To seriously answer your question, occasionally in an office environment, there have been. I remember at Nation Builder, there was someone who had some sort of feet hygiene issues. So, you know, I mean,
be respectful,
but other than that, like, they want you to be comfortable so that your brain can, like, you know, churn out quality product.
Yeah, I would say that it's very company dependent. Most companies now that are tech companies don't have stringent dress codes, but there are companies out there that do. If you go and work for IBM, say, you probably, or AT&T, you might have a dress code. But if you go work, if you work for Weedmaps or you work for Automatic or Cellbrite or any of these other companies, then you won't.
So you're saying you're a programmer for Weedmaps?
Yeah, this is the. You missed the introductions, yes. most of the companies I've worked at don't have strict dress codes, but sometimes when you go and meet with actual customers, you will need to, like, dress up. Like, business casual is the highest.
That would be fine.
That'd be fine.
I mean, you gotta patch that hole, but.
Any questions from the audience? Yes. Right there. Right there.
What led you to, like, marijuana? Yeah, this is
okay. All right, specific question. What led you to working in...
Like, how did you get there?
How did you get to working with marijuana?
Well, I was a purveyor, a consumer, as it were, and I felt strongly about the legalization of it, and the opportunity arose. I was recruited. They reached out to me through my LinkedIn profile.
Because he left somewhere.
Yeah.
And a silly question, but you guys are all university students, correct? You guys didn't learn programming by yourselves?
No, I did. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to encourage anyone to drop out of high school, but I did. I said earlier that luck is very important, and I have had an abundance of luck. Had the mentorship. I started at Disney when I was 19. The corporate group that handled all that kind of stuff. And if you were to go that route, you definitely want to get in at a Fortune 50 where you can make mistakes on someone else's dime. But that aside, I am I had mentors, and I was kind of very enthusiastic and autodidactic, self-taught, and peer-taught in a lot of ways. So while university wasn't for me, I had an interest in the field, so that helped a lot. But stay in school, kids.
I graduated in university, but I did not learn to program in school. I actually learned after and taught myself. So I studied, I said earlier, but you weren't here. I studied microbiology, and I'm grateful that I was able to study like a science and got a large mathematics and background. But, and I use that, what I learned all the time, which was the ability to learn. Like I learned how to learn in college more than I learned, like actually use the specifics of what I learned, if that makes sense.
And I guess I should say too, my undergraduate degree is in art and art history. I definitely did not think that was initially what I was going to do. And I kind of took the opposite route than Kevin did, where I didn't know what else. I didn't know how you learned or how you were to go about it. So I did the only thing I knew, which was I started taking night classes and then eventually started going to community college full time to figure out like what this was, and then applied to grad school because that was the only path I knew. But it wasn't, I think like all of us, none of it was a direct, like we went to school knowing that we were going to do this, and that was how we followed through, kind of, we found our way.
I have a quick question. So if you could describe a typical work day, and I love that some is freelance, so can you set your own hours? What does a day look like? And do you, as a freelancer, do you have to work like 10-hour days, 12-hour days, etc.?
My current job as an architect, I'm in a lot of meetings all day, so I don't get to set my own hours that often. I end up I have to be present for the meetings. But when I was writing software, it was much more freeform. Especially since I work remotely from my home, I don't need to. When I'm writing software, I don't need to be there like from 9 to 5. If I want to take a break during the day to go grocery shopping or go for a walk, I'm free to do that. Because I think that's important in software engineering, because so much of it is a creative process. There's a lot of critical thinking, there's a lot of logic, there's a lot of rational thought. But in order to be successful, you have to have moments of inspiration to connect the dots. Like you can outline your problem, but sometimes outlining the problem is the hardest part. And so like to understand it and decompose it, sometimes I need to go for a walk. I need to like sleep on it. I need to have the flexibility to engage in non-standard thought in some way, like to like really grasp the problem, and then I can move towards a solution. And so in that way, my days are atypical most of the time. I try to figure some amount of structure and routine in to, without any routine, it's chaos. So I do need some structure, but generally it's pretty flexible. If I need to take the time, I can take the time.
Well, maybe I should just clarify too. So none of us are freelance right now. So there's distributed work, I think, which Kevin and I do, which maybe is a little confusing, is...
They don't have a central office.
Yeah, it's very unique to tech, and I think we're one of the only industries that do it, whereas you still, it's like a normal job, same requirements, it's just that you don't have a central office, as Charlie said. But similar to what Kevin did is I also work all the time in weird hours from my home. But a lot of my team is based not in the US. So that really dictates a lot of my schedule. Is sometimes I'm having meetings at 6 a.m. because I'm talking to people in Eastern Europe. And then sometimes I'm having meetings at 6 p.m. because I'm talking to people in Australia. So the remote work kind of allows that flexibility, but it's not necessarily a very strict schedule. For the most part, I actually do work. I'm an early riser, so it works really well for me to get up at like 6 or 5 and then, you know, quit my day mainly like at 3 or something like that, because that's a better schedule for me. But yeah, like Kevin said, I feel like so much of what we do is driven by these like moments of insanity where all of a sudden you get it and you like want to go and you'll work for like 4 or 5 hours. Like I've had moments where it's gotten dark and the lights are off and I don't even realize that around me. You know, it's just like this like insane sort of, which is really scary for the people you live with who just like come home and see you in the dark, like staring at a screen. But it is, I think, this very off and on kind of pattern that we work best in.
I probably have the most structured of the three of us. I go to an office. Little pro tip, try to live as close to your office as possible. If you have to go to an office, my commute is 4 miles. I know in Los Angeles that's very challenging. So typical day-to-day, I roll in about 9:45, you know, and that gives me time to get a cup of coffee. And then at 10 o'clock, the whole team, about 8 of us, get together and we discuss yesterday. And it's kind of a loose plan for today, just to make sure that everybody is, you know, moving towards a goal. And then, you know, we work, eat some lunch, go to a meeting, if you have to. I don't. I attend maybe 3 meetings a week, and some of those I just walk out of. And then, you know, I'm out anywhere between 4:30 and 8 p.m., usually closer to 5:30, 5 o'clock. So, but there have been times in my career when I would get up at 4 a.m., start writing code, and continue until midnight. So, you know, be prepared for that. It's not every day, but it'll, you know, there'll definitely be periods of time when it's like that. But right now I'm in a good spot in that I come in, I do what I need to do, and then I go work on my home projects. Actually, that leads me, one thing that has been sort of instrumental in my career is having an interest outside of any job, right? Like at one point I was making just some different pieces of software that I was really interested in how they worked, and I wanted to make one for myself. So, you know, just for example, say you wanted to make a calculator. Well, let's make a calculator. You know, hopefully you can find some use or some application that is of interest to you and use that as like a springboard to aid in staying interested enough to learn the parts of the tech that you're maybe not that enthusiastic about. So find a little hobby and then, you know, use computer technology to further that and to further your self-education.
Is there a question?
Any questions? Yes.
I'm in banking, and I'm looking to actually pivot more towards maybe IT or, you know, software development, anything like that. And so, I'm starting from the ground floor. I mean, we're talking Book of Genesis, you know. And right now, I'm in the process of actually trying to learn Perl, but in terms of like a basic language, is that a good start?
JavaScript.
Wait a minute. Perl was my first language.
Good start. I have to repeat the question.
Thank you, Kevin. Perl, it's not a good starting point.
Okay.
It was my starting point, we're losing people. So. Props on that, but I would start looking at Ruby. I like Ruby. I'm biased. JavaScript is a good thing to start getting familiar with. Start there. What actually led you to Perl?
The reason why is because I like Sabermetrics, and so I actually have a fantasy baseball. And so in terms of creating an algorithm or basically a program, I heard from other people that I talked to that when you use the Perl script, Strawberry Perl or some other ones, it's really easy to basically pull the information from FanGraphs or other baseball sites and basically able to go ahead and create like a sort of like a vetting process. Again, I don't know anything about programming languages, but it's something that has fascinated me
Fascination.
That's kind of a key word. If you find yourself fascinated by technology, you're off to a good start. So,
props.
So JavaScript, I mean, in terms of the
Python might actually be really good for what you're looking at, because Python has some really good mathematic libraries, better than the ones that I know of for Perl or JavaScript or Ruby.
Yeah, the only reason I said JavaScript, not knowing what you're doing, is that it's very easy. There's a lot of user feedback in it because you're essentially doing something that's very visual, so you can see your code actually working and running really well. As also, it's very applicable to jobs right now. A lot of companies are hiring for JavaScript, and it is something that's easy-ish to get going on, but still teaches you the fundamentals, I would say. Kevin disagrees.
Give me your info.
Give it to that lady in the back.
I think Yaquin.
And I just want to plug a database really quick from the library. We have the database Lynda. So some programs you can learn on it for free with your library card at home. So if you're wondering how to find that, you can ask us at the desk.
Oh,
okay. And questions, sir?
I have two questions. What are your salaries? And
tax returns, please.
Yeah, just salaries.
Just a general knowledge of what kind of salaries one makes in your field.
I mean, let's just say, general, you will make probably six figures.
I think a lot of starting salaries, if you go through a boot camp, like one of the boot camps, or you can establish yourself as proficient in a language, the starting salaries range from anywhere from 60 to 90,000 in that kind of range. Once you have 3 to 5 years of experience, you can start getting into the 90 to like 130,000 range. Past that, if you're excelling, then the sky's the limit. I know that top engineers at Microsoft and Google and Facebook make upwards of seven figures.
Those are unicorns, though. I mean, they're nobody up here. I'll tell you that. I mean, we're all north of six figures, so without going into any details.
Yeah, I think also, too, it's where you want to work as well. So we have all chosen to work at smaller companies where we have a lot of freedom, I think, as well. If you're looking at a Google or a Facebook, which also will require, for sure, some sort of CS degree, I would say, those companies will generally pay, once you get really good, easily, I think, $200,000 to $300,000 once you get into bonuses and things like that. But with that comes different sets of rules and regulations. So
they also tend to pay with equity.
Yeah, right. So it's a package, I guess we should say. So if you go that route, you'll probably make, and you can get into the seven figures, make more money, but it's different than, I think, the path that we've all chosen, I would say.
Yeah, I didn't want to, well, one, I wasn't going to get on at Facebook or Google anyway. Earlier on, and I don't think this is the case now, but it was very, like, there's some, like, they were Harvard, Yale only kind of rumors about Google, but I don't know if that's still the case.
I have heard that Google has a pretty, like, firm, not Ivy League, but a firm CS degree, like, so that would, policy.
Rule me out. I don't know what my point was.
Well, I would say that there's definitely different tracks you can take in software engineering that have different kind of price points that you're going to hit in terms of salary. If you go entrepreneurial and you start and you basically learn enough so that you can start your own company, you have the most risk of not getting paid, but the biggest upside if you do. So you make a startup, you might succeed and you might get a huge investment and you might be able to pay out. You might not. I mean, most startups fail. Like, it's just how the world works. But if you go in and you become like an employee, and then the size of the company will kind of can dictate how much you're going to get paid. And some companies that make a lot more money, they tend to pay a lot more.
I did remember what I was heading towards. And I worked at Disney for a long time, which was like, it wasn't hard enough. It was boring. And then I worked at different startups. And now I'm in kind of a sweet spot with work-life balance, you know, like what I was mentioning earlier, working those long hours. I don't do that now. And, you know, I've gotten to a place where I'm not really chasing salary, but I'm having a lot of fun outside of work as well. So,
as far as an industry,
take this away from
like an employment industry, it's a always in demand industry right now.
Yeah, I think to that point, I think that we can all say we are constantly recruited by, you know, like we're not necessarily looking for jobs, but there's a constant influx of people trying to hire for what we do.
And one of the questions I think that was going to get asked was how important is networking? And networking is incredibly important that I've seen in this industry. Not all the jobs I've gotten through have been through networking, but I definitely joined Charlie after Nation Builder because I knew him, right?
I just had a thought. I just had a thought, and this is, you know, it just occurs to me that we have three white people, but how's the diversity at Weed Maps and Automatic?
The diversity at Weed Maps is awful.
Great.
I mean, not...
on the software side.
Same for Automatic, I would say engineering. I mean, the company is very diverse, engineering is not. I mean, I'm obviously a lady sitting up here with these two guys. I've always been the first woman hired onto a team I've joined. Even at Automatic, I think we have, I don't know, somewhere between probably north of like 300 engineers. I think probably there's six of us maybe that are female, something like that. Like the percentages on average, I think for women in the industry is below 5% usually on a team. And even 5% is considered high.
And what are you doing to...
What am I doing?
Yeah.
Well...
is it of a concern to you?
Yeah. I mean, I actually work with a lot of organizations. Girls Who Code is the one that I'm the biggest supporter of. I've taught classes for them. I speak for them. What I really look at it now as, and this is one of the reasons I went to grad school too, is I just didn't have the confidence going into a group of all men interviewing me or working with me, I think, until I had school. School was like it was what I could clutch to, and it's what made me feel validated when I was starting out. But I really think it's a numbers game. And I think with STEM and all of these programs like Girls Who Code, there's a few other ones. I think it's great that they're going into schools and going in early. I think learning early, getting interested early, and also seeing that there's other people like you who are interested is really important. But yeah, Girls Who Code, I would say, if you're a woman and you're interested, they're a really great organization. They have, I think, at least 6 or 7 summer programs in LA as well, so you can check them out.
Actually, the LA Public Library, we're getting Girls Who Code clubs happening. So,
that's great.
So,
that's
yes.
That's really awesome.
We have about 3 more minutes. Does anyone, I know the hour went by really fast. Does anyone have any last questions, comments? If any of you have any advice? Oh, yes, go ahead.
I'm going to take that one. My friend here asked, do we have any advice for people that are maybe not as strong as in mathematics, but are still interested in technology? I am not a math person, but I have a sort of a grip on how systems work. So, for me, math hasn't been important enough until I start looking at macro behavior of systems and how they deal with stress and load and things like that. So to answer your question, if you don't have an aptitude so much in math, focus on the communication side of it. And don't be intimidated because you don't have a strong interest in math. Learn anything. Learn like the Python, JavaScript, Ruby, any of it. Just start, which is hard. I know how hard it is to just get started, but.
There are a lot of online tutorials too. Just if you Google like how to learn JavaScript or at least a starting point.
I would say that there's also aspects of programming that, like I said, the communication side is definitely big, but there's also, if you are visually inclined, there's the going through JavaScript and the design aspects and designing user experiences isn't as mathematically oriented. I think that understanding math and like being able, you don't have to be great at it, but being able to like understand the basics is really important. So I think there's still place there, and I think you can make it very far without having a firm mathematical understanding. Like Charlie, he's very proud of that.
I'm not proud of it. I think I failed pre-algebra two or three times. I'm not endorsing that, but I have, you know, I've done okay without like calculus or trig or anything like that. It was a little bit of a disadvantage when I was doing some game programming, but since what I do now is mostly like business to business, like there's like, we need to tell, you know, system A needs to tell system B that we have a number of widgets. And then it's like, okay, we did it. Yay.
A lot of the math is actually pretty, it's algebraic, most of it. You don't need like a firm calculus understanding. If you go into video games, you should learn linear algebra. Unfortunately, that is almost a prerequisite if you're going to be doing 3D manipulations. Because you have to, 2D. Huh?
Even 2D.
Even 2D, yeah. Matrix transforms are really important there. But if you go into web programming, a lot of people don't need firm mathematical backgrounds. When you're designing a web page, like just being able to add and subtract is enough to like figure out the box model and place things on a page correctly.
I also want to say, learn Vim if you can. We all spend all day, or a good portion of every day, editing text, right? Vim is the next iteration of VI, which was, I'm not going to get into the history of Vim, but it's a way to edit text quickly without, you know, touching the mouse too often.
I see, what he really means is get comfortable at the command line.
I mean that too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much. Go ahead.
One second. One thing that I was thinking about before this event, I don't know what question I was anticipating, but having an appreciation for the history of computing and, you know, like everybody's walking around, everybody has a computer in their pocket right now. But think about where this originated in this, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. And just to have an appreciation for what those pioneers were able to do with the resources at the time, which is, you know, one of the things I like about Vim, you know, it does have this long history starting back in 73, I think. We won't get into it, but an appreciation for the history of whatever career you do end up getting into helps a lot. It's kind of, yeah. So.
True. Thank you so much. That was excellent last words. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to the audience for participating. If there's extra questions, maybe if you can hang around for a couple minutes afterwards, let's give a round of applause.
Thank you.